This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
It's Thursday. Welcome to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Tony is the president of the Family Research Council, and he and his family, well, they're on a desperately needed break, taking some time away. I'm the producer of this program. It's great to be with you once again. Well, on today's show, last year, the U.S. Air Force fired a high-ranking commander and denied him a promotion to be general because he declined to personally affirm a homosexual relationship. Some 25 House Republicans have signed onto a letter supporting Colonel Bohannon's religious freedom. We'll talk with one of those signers, Congressman Doug Lamborn of Colorado, in just a little bit. And FEMA will now allow churches and houses of worship to receive federal disaster relief funds. Daniel Bloomberg, counsel for the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, will join us with the details. And President Trump's Advisory Commission on Election Integrity. Well, it's disbanded. FRC's own Ken Blackwell served on that commission, and he'll be here to tell us what happened. You can follow all this on the web, tonyperkins.com. You can also follow Tony on Twitter. He's at T Perkins. That's at T Perkins. And you can follow me, yours truly, at Russ Jones Speaks. Glad to have you along. I'm going to be with you for the next several days while Tony enjoys some time away with his family. Well, back in October, the U.S. Air Force asked Colonel Leland Bohannon to sign a certificate honoring the same-sex marriage of a retiring airman. The colonel asked a different commander to sign, citing religious accommodation, which complies with the United States Air Force policy, but the Air Force promptly ended his career. And this past December, some 25 members of the House signed a letter to the United States Air Force Secretary in support of the colonel's religious liberty. One of those who signed the letter was Representative Doug Lamborn. With us now is Congressman Lamborn. He represents the 5th Congressional District of Colorado. He serves on the House Armed Services Committee and the Committee on Natural Resources. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Russ, it's great to talk with you.
Hey, you're one of our champions on the Hill, and it's always glad to have you. Did you have a good New Year's and good Christmas?
It was wonderful, and I'm glad that we can go around saying Merry Christmas again.
Yes, it is. I might get in trouble for it, but at least from our leader on the Hill there, it's all good.
Well, sir, that's right, that's right.
Let me ask you this. You've been following this closely, and of course, the Family Research Center and American Family Association delivered a petition with over 77,000 signatures to the Pentagon late last year to the Pentagon in support of the colonel. Tell us, where are things at and what's going on with this new letter that you've signed on to?
Well, and actually, I initiated the letter, got four colleagues to co-sign with me, and we're hoping to hear back soon from Air Force Secretary Heather Wilson. Mm-hmm. Because we just sent the letter, we haven't heard back yet. I know some senators had a letter also earlier in the year, which I appreciate. Ted Cruz helped initiate that. So at this point, we're waiting to hear, but we're not going to go quietly into the night. I mean, when this kind of violation of a person's religious freedom crops up, we're going to call attention to it and hold people's feet to the fire.
For our listeners, just explain the details of what happened.
Well, and you gave a good rundown a few minutes ago. Colonel Bohannon, who has had a long and distinguished career, was asked to sign a certificate of appreciation for a spouse of a retiring airmen. And this happens all the time. It's a tradition. It's not in any rules or regulations or laws. It's just a tradition in the Air Force. But it turns out that the spouse was a same-sex spouse. Colonel Bohannon had misgivings based on his longstanding religious convictions. Mm-hmm. And rather than just ignore the issue, he asked someone else to provide the signature. And someone else was willing to do that. But that wasn't good enough for one of his immediate superiors, who wanted to make an example out of him and retaliated, basically, and tried to take measures that would effectively end Colonel Bohannon's career in the Air Force.
And that's kind of where we're at today on these issues. It's not good enough if somebody else signs, like in this particular situation. There is a movement, not only in our culture, but the military. They've got a battle on the battlefield, but they have also now seems to be have a battle, the PC battle, the politically correct culture battlefield. And we thought with President Trump that this would change, but apparently it's not changing that quickly.
Not fast enough. I mean, there have been some good steps in the right direction in some of the different federal agencies. There are some good things happening, but you see this, unfortunately, crop up from time to time. And what's really ironic, Russ, is that Colonel Bohannon and so many others of our wonderful men and women in uniform, they signed up to sometimes actually put their lives on the line. In addition to making a career out of defending the very freedoms that, at least in this case, they were not allowed to enjoy.
Yeah, I did a little research on him, and he had served with honor and distinction as a bomber pilot in Afghanistan and Iraq, and he earned the Bronze Star, the Defense Meritorious Service Medal, and the Air Medal, and the judgment by the United States Air Force, however, has blocked his promotion to become a Brigadier General. Is that right?
That's what I see happening, and he's exactly the kind of person that we do want to promote. Mm-hmm. And he didn't go out of his way to insult or to ostracize someone who is in a same-sex marriage. He just said, let someone else participate, and I have a conviction that it's against what I believe in from his biblically derived convictions. But that wasn't good enough for some of his superiors in the Air Force, and I think that was tragic.
Well, let me
we're trying to fix it, Russ.
Right. And let me ask you just a very basic question. Can a military commander be fired because he doesn't proactively affirm the value of a homosexual relationship?
Well, there's nothing that allows for that, and that should not be the case. But we have a lot of political correctness going on. Mm-hmm. And like you said, there are people out there who are militant, and they don't want just to be accepted in their same-sex marriage, but they want it to be affirmed by every single person around them, or they take great offense.
Mm-hmm. Well, if a homosexual airman wanted to kind of pick an ideological fight, it's a pretty big battle here, because you know, these ideas of diversity and tolerance and religious liberty, these are protected, but it seems like they're not protected when it comes to somebody that may have a strongly held religious belief, and then there's this major battle.
Exactly. And Russ, when someone goes into the military, yes, they give up certain rights. They make a promise to that they'll follow the orders that they're given, or lawful orders. That's good. We want that to happen. But they don't sign away all their constitutional rights by any means.
Well, let me ask you this. Should there be a mea culpa here, a reversal, or would he go back if there was a reversal?
What we're asking for is that there be a reversal of any decision that was made that was derogatory toward his career, and that any derogatory letter that was put in his file be removed, and that he'd be allowed to continue on the normal promotion track for potential higher rank.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's change courses here just a little bit. A lot of conversation now with the passage of the tax reform cuts about DACA and the Dreamers. And where are we at on that? The Senate's already in Washington, D.C. I guess the votes have been canceled because of weather and travel and whatnot. And you'll be heading back next week. So where are we at with that?
Great question, Russ. I think that the Democrats are spoiling for a fight. They want to shut down the government on January 19th. There's a deadline that falls at that point with the current continuing resolution that we're under, and they want to have some what they would consider a breakthrough on DACA without – I haven't heard of them making any concessions. When President Trump last year said, let's make some progress for the Dreamers. And that was a change in his previous stance. So people were, the Democrats saying, okay, let's work with him. But he also said, let's have some security measures in there. Let's build a border, enhance the border wall that's on the southern border. Well, the Democrats don't want any part of that. They want to refuse any even funding for that. He wants internal security with better Social Security number verification and other things like that, that they're not willing to make any concessions on the part of the Democrats. So I'm not seeing that we're anywhere near a resolution. Maybe the Senate being more moderate than the House, at least in the majority and with a tighter majority, they may come to some kind of compromise. But if we don't have all kinds of security things in place, plus for people like me, Russ, I don't want anything that leads to amnesty. Amnesty is a whole different issue, and I don't want to open that box at this time. So I don't see the House going along with the Senate, even if the Senate has some kind of compromise here. So right now, I think we're at loggerheads, and I don't see a way out of it.
And President Trump, you know, as we all know, he's a deal maker. He really wants that wall. And I guess the other day he said, you know, give me the wall and I'll give you the Dreamers. So I guess, you know, will Democrats use these kids as a pawn?
Well, I think that's what we're seeing. That's exactly what we're seeing. And it should be above politics. And they're threatening to shut down the government. They know that the press will side with them, who has done so historically, and blame Republicans for any shutdown, no matter what causes it or who causes it. So they have the press on their side in this, unfortunately.
And Democrats have surely drawn their own red line, haven't they, insisting that they will not accept any proposals that includes construction of a border wall or any changes to legal immigration?
Well, exactly. And the thing is, President Obama clearly acted unconstitutionally, Russ, when he said, we're going to use prosecutorial discretion to say the 3 or 4 million people will never deport you. You know, that was an abuse of the legal system. And that alone should be a reason to hesitate and not go forward till that gets fixed.
And we've just got a minute or two left here on the Natural Resources Committee. Did you see just earlier today President Trump opening up, calling for more drilling?
I did, Russ. I think that's good news. I think that we can responsibly and safely do exploration and possible production of energy off of the shores of the U.S., including California and Florida, and as well as in the Atlantic area. We already do so in New Mexico. If you do it in shallow waters, you'll never have a Macondo disaster like we did see a few years ago, because you can go down and fix it. That was a mile underwater. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the continental shelf, which is very shallow, easy to fix if there's ever a problem.
Well, Congressman, thank you so much. We're out of time. Congressman Doug Lamborn of Colorado, thank you so much. Have a great new year. Well, coming up, here's a story that could impact many of our listeners impacted by the recent flooding. It's FEMA funding for houses of worship. We'll talk with Daniel Bloomberg of the Beckett Fund when we return.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. A candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Hear Mr. Arnakis discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Washington Watch, powered by the Family Research Council. Tony Perkins is the president. He's on a vacation with his family. Desperately needed. That man works so hard. He lives a life in 15-minute segments, meeting with people, lawmakers, decision makers. It's been about a year and a half now that I've been producing Washington Watch and have seen from the inside the significance of this organization and what it does to stand up for faith, family, and freedom. And one such story that falls into that, President Trump's Federal Emergency Management Agency announced a change in policy Tuesday, which would allow houses of worship to apply for and receive disaster relief funds. FEMA pointed to a Supreme Court ruling from last year, which held a church could receive state money to rebuild its playground for the reason behind its change in policy. And with us now is Daniel Bloomberg, counsel for the Beckett Fund for the Religious Liberty. He's been involved in the legal end of this battle. Daniel, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you for taking time to join us. Well, the suit argued that FEMA's policy constituted discrimination and thus violated the First Amendment's Free Exercise Clause. Is that right?
That's right. You know, FEMA's old policy said that if you are an organization that was established or primarily used for religious purposes, then you couldn't get the kind of disaster relief aid that nonprofits like community centers and museums, that even zoos could get. And, you know, when it comes to natural disasters, helping communities get back on their feet is an all-hands-on-deck sort of thing. And it makes no sense to not only refuse to help houses of worship, but to refuse to help these ministries that are often on the front lines of getting the community back on its feet in the first place.
Yeah, you're exactly right. We certainly saw a lot of that this last year with the hurricanes and the flooding. Let me just ask a very basic question. How and why were churches excluded in the first place?
It's a basic question that doesn't have a basic answer, unfortunately. We know the policy was put in place during the Clinton administration, and frankly, FEMA's never had a coherent rationale for it. And they certainly didn't offer one when the churches in Texas and the synagogues in Florida sued and said, hey, we have the exact same type of damage that other nonprofits have, but they're getting your help, and we're not. And the only reason why you won't help us is because we're religious. So stop, you know, start following the First Amendment, stop following an old Clinton administration policy.
And it's certainly true. Congregations all across the nation have usually pretty big facilities. All of them have a kitchen that's sitting there available to use to feed people, to you know, and there's gymnasiums where cots can be set up, and they're ideal to help the community. And they often do. They are many times our first responders. Let me ask you this. What do you say to the person who asks, what separates a church from, say, Walmart, calling this decision a slippery slope in regards to the Establishment Clause? Help our people understand how to engage in that argument.
Listen, you know, when a synagogue is burning down, when a church is burning down, the firefighters don't pull out their constitution and say, I'd help you, but for the Establishment Clause. Mm-hmm. No, they go and they put out the fire. And when there's a, you know, God forbid, when there's a church shooter, you know, an active shooter at a church, they don't stop outside and say, we can't help you because you're a church. No, when it comes to these kind of emergency situations, our government springs into action. They help churches on the same basis as they help anyone else. And that's the right thing to do. And that's all that's being asked of FEMA here, right? This is disaster relief. And the only types, the specific kind of grants that are issued here are for where public health and safety is threatened. And so FEMA is just serving as a conduit from the rest of the country saying, hey, we're trying to help your community get back on its feet. We're not building anything new, right? We're not like making a skyscraper or something like that or building this huge facility. We're restoring facilities that were wiped out by disaster. We're just helping you get back on your feet. And that's something that the Establishment Clause doesn't forbid, but the Free Exercise Clause does require. You can't discriminate against churches just because they're churches. That's wrong.
Well, one of the congregations, wasn't it Highway Tabernacle? I mean, it was nearly destroyed, about 30 inches of flood water after Hurricane Harvey. And even as the water continued to seep into the congregation, the highway sheltered some 80 or 90 evacuees. And they hold up, they were in Sunday school classrooms, and many weren't members of the congregation and even particularly religious. And that, isn't that a way of serving the community?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And FEMA's never said otherwise. To its credit, FEMA has always said, you know what? Churches are, and I'm quoting here, they say churches are essential to our disaster recovery efforts. In fact, after, you know, Harvey and Irma went through, a study was done, and they said, you know, about 80% of the efforts and resources that are going into rebuilding the damaged places are coming from nonprofits, and most of those nonprofits are religious nonprofits, mm-hmm. right? The faith community often comes together from a variety of different faith traditions and helps people get back on their feet after a disaster. And so it just makes no sense at all when, you know, FEMA is literally using the church gym at Highway Tabernacle to process applications to help people out. And the church gym is literally being used to hand out food and to provide a place or shelter for evacuees, to provide medical services, even to provide haircuts, right?
Yeah, right.
But FEMA's sitting there using that church gym, and it won't help the church sanctuary. Or rather, it wouldn't help the church sanctuary.
Well, this is really good news. You know, this show airs on some 250 stations across the country, and we have a lot of people that are active in their churches. And so what happens now to the lawsuit with this policy change now that the case is in appeal?
Well, the important thing that happens right now is that churches like Highway Tabernacle and Rockport First Assembly of God, which is right there, you know, when Hurricane Harvey first made landfall, they were in, you know, right there in Ground Zero. And then Harvest Family Church right outside of Houston, you know, these churches are finally going to get a fair shake. They're going to get a chance to get their applications for help processed just like any other nonprofit. And that's good news for them, and that's good news for churches all across the country.
Well, Daniel Bloomberg of the Beckett Fund, thank you so much. We appreciate you being on Washington Watch. We'll have you on again. Well, coming up next, President Trump has dissolved his advisory commission on election integrity. FRC's own Ken Blackwell will be here to tell us about it. He was on that commission. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins.
Pro-Life Con is FRC's Digital Action Summit celebrating digital pro-life activism. Join us live via webcast on January 19th from FRC's headquarters in Washington. At this year's conference, you will hear from political leaders, bloggers, journalists, and activists, as well as testimonies from families and individuals who chose life. You'll be empowered to better reach your own communities by learning from those who are at the cutting edge of the digital pro-life movement. Tune in Friday, January 19th at prolifecon.com.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, producer of this program, sitting in for Tony Perkins. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm going to be with you for the next several days as Tony enjoys some needed time away with his family. Well, just after President Trump was elected, he created the Advisory Commission on Election Integrity. The commission was formed in response to President Trump's claims that widespread voter fraud cost him the popular vote nationally and cost him New Hampshire's 4 electoral votes. The White House announced Wednesday evening that President Trump had signed an executive order dissolving the panel, citing a lack of cooperation by states in turning over information about their voters. Joining us now is Ken Blackwell. He's the Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance for the Family Research Council and former Ohio Secretary of State. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Russ. Good to be with you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. You staying warm out there?
I tell you, I know how to deal with the cold.
Yes.
As a linebacker, we couldn't wear gloves. So
my dad lives up in Marysville, Ohio, and I ask him all the time, "Hey, how's that weather doing?" So, well, tell us, you were on this commission, and you all met a couple of times, and just bring us up to date. How did we get here?
Well, the commission was, as you mentioned, hampered by about a dozen of meaningless lawsuits, nuisance lawsuits that were filed by a special interest group only to or for the sole purpose of preventing us from doing our work. It took up our staff's time fighting this litigation. There were partisan personalities out there in the states that decided that they would be obstructionists. And although we got most of them back on track, it took up a lot of time. And so many of these groups have forfeited their seats at the table. The president has made a decision that as opposed to just marching in place and fighting meaningless lawsuits, that he would go in another direction. This is a very entrepreneurial president. He doesn't spend a lot of time marching in place or, chasing windmills. At the end of the day, and I'll just give you an example. Early in the spring of last year, he disbanded two business council advisory councils that weren't even 2 months old. They were bogged down in petty politics, and what he decided to do was to disband them and to pursue his pro-growth, pro-business agenda. And, you know, what happened? We're now looking at over 3% growth. Where the stock market is, you know, has, you know, crossed
25,000 on the Dow today.
labor participation is up, and so are wages. So as a consequence, this president is basically saying, look, we'll shift this responsibility over to a Homeland Security, and we'll let these elected officials who are charged with safeguarding the integrity of our elections at the state level tell their voters that they will not participate with the professional in Homeland Security that are concerned about protecting the integrity of our ballots, that they are concerned with election vulnerabilities and threats from forces both domestic and abroad. As I've told you and Tony on a number of occasions, you know, when we first got involved in this election business, we were primarily concerned about access to the ballot. And it is reasonably easy for folks to register and go to the polls. For the last 10, 12 years, we've balanced our concern about access to the ballot with protecting the integrity of the vote. Because for every fraudulent vote you have, you negate a legitimate vote. And so basic safeguards like voter ID and making sure people vote where they're supposed to vote have helped us protect the integrity of elections. But we have work to do. And this president is determined to in fact, get the job done.
And you said exactly, this is a business guy. He tries things. If it doesn't work, get rid of it. You know, that, but the left, of course, is coming unhinged because, oh, this is breaking apart. But no, it just didn't work.
Oh, no, it didn't work. And what's so funny about it, they had a seat at the table. We basically said, let's have an extended table. Unfortunately, we had one Democratic commissioner die. We had another commissioner who was more interested in stirring the pot than getting something done. And as a consequence, we got stalled. And this president said, I'm not having any of this. Let's get the job done by switching this over to the Homeland Security professionals. And Russ, let me just tell you, none of us who have been concerned about this are having our access to the White House pulled. So, you know, we're going to be right in there contributing to making sure that we protect the integrity of our elections because that's the heart and soul of our democracy.
Well, Ken, we had you on because we knew we'd get the real story. Thank you so much. We're out of time. Appreciate what you're doing out in the trenches. Thank you. Have a great year. Blessings to you. That's Ken Blackwell, senior fellow at the Family Research Council, former Secretary of State for Ohio. Give us a call next, 866-372-7234. This is Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones.
Can a Facebook post or a tweet or an Instagram picture save a life? At Family Research Council's 13th annual Pro-Life Con Digital Action Summit, pro-life activists from around the country will gather to explore the impact that digital media has on the culture of human life. Join us via live webcast from Washington, D.C. the morning of Friday, January 19th from 8:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. At this year's conference, you will hear from political leaders, bloggers, journalists, and activists, as well as testimonies from families and individuals who chose life. At the intersection of cutting-edge technology and a passion for the lives of the unborn, you'll be educated and empowered to better reach your community on social media. With this innovative information, anyone can make an impact for the pro-life movement anytime and anywhere. Also, see live coverage from the National Mall as the March for Life gets underway. Tune in on January 19th at ProLifeCon.com. Again, visit ProLifeCon.com for more information.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. You can go retrieve, download all this great content at TonyPerkins.com. Each show is archived. You can download it, listen to it if you didn't get to hear it all today while you're working out, whatever it is, going on a walk. It's pretty cold out there. I usually like to go walk with my wife, walk about a mile or two, and it has been too cold. So, you know, what's on my bucket list is a treadmill. I'd like to get a treadmill and been evaluating the different reviews, which ones are good. You know, I'd like to be able to have one that I can put my iPad on there and stay up with the news and what's going on. So go to TonyPerkins.com. You can also follow Tony on Twitter at TPerkins. You can follow me at Russ Jones Speaks. Did you hear the news? Wall Street, the Dow, broke 25,000 mark. First time ever. You just want to see how folks are feeling about the economy, about the tax cuts. Just go take a look at your 401k. Take a look at Wall Street. See what these numbers are doing. See what the business leaders, business owners are feeling. You see all these employees in these major corporations who are getting these bonuses, $1,000, $2,000 bonuses in reaction. That's pretty cool. That's very cool. Give us a call. You're listening to Washington Watch. Love to hear your thoughts today on what you've heard. Phone number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. It's Thoughtful Thursday. Thankful Thursday. What are you thankful for? And what are you going to do to serve this coming year? Are you going to run for school board? Are you going to get involved locally in your community to make a difference? Well, let's go to Billy in Alabama. Billy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. After listening to Mr. Blackburn, he gave me thoughts of Alabama, the election that just occurred.
Yes.
And, my thoughts on it is President Trump, I believe, won by 28%, and they said that that Judge Roy Moore lost by 1.5%. And it's possible, what I believe anyway, it's possible that fraud has occurred in this state, and there's 200,000 votes that's been voted that was accurate in the online voting system. Mm-hmm. So I hope that DOJ checks out Alabama.
Well, they may very well. Thanks for calling, Billy. Give us a call, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. But, you know, I'm always a bit intrigued. You know, folks have IDs for everything. Why is it a problem to show ID to vote? I mean, you need an ID to rent a movie. Back in the day, I'm of a generation where you used to go rent a movie. You didn't just tune into Netflix or whatever. But you know, people ask me for ID all the time when I go rent a car or go do whatever it is. I need ID. And I just don't have a problem showing my identity when I go do one of the most important tasks I have to do as a citizen, which is to vote. I'm not offended by that, and I don't look at it as some form of oppression or to repress voters at the ballot. I just don't get that. Give us a call, 866-372-7234. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. And what are you going to do this year? What is it? What's on your agenda? What would you like to see happen in your life? What would you like to see happen in your community? And how are you going to be a part of the, the solution? I was going to go to Christopher. He wants an amendment in the Constitution to force states to come, for a national ID. Christopher, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Hey, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, I love your show. Thanks for filling in for Tony. Somebody needs to give him a break.
Yeah, that man works hard. I'm telling you, he works hard, harder than anybody I know. He knows it.
I believe that if we force the hand on the states or any national election in a constitutional amendment or national elections, that they would have to require an ID. I mean, there's amendments about so many other things, about 18th birthday. I mean, there should be citizens, and you should be living in the state that you say you're living in. You know, and I think we need to hold their feet to the fire and get rid of the filibuster, and we could do it.
Well, You know, when you go vote, you have to show your ID. Are you offended by that?
Absolutely not, sir.
I don't think most people are. Well, Christopher, thanks so much for calling. I appreciate you calling Washington Watch. Let's go to
Dan.
God bless you. Daniel in Louisiana.
Hi, Don.
Yes, hi, Daniel. Welcome to the show.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate your show. And I think yesterday you said you joined, like, the military or something?
Well, I told the story of, I don't have a lot of regrets in my life, but after you've lived long enough, you look back and you wish you would have done a few things. And one of the regrets in my life is not serving in our nation's military. And I was recruited once upon a time, heavily recruited for several years. They kept moving the age, and they finally said, Russ, we can't make it any higher than 42. You got to either do this thing or not. And because of life circumstances and whatnot, I said, you know, I'm just going to have to pass. And I did. And I was out to dinner a few weeks ago with some friends, and they told me about this opportunity called the Mississippi State Guard. And on January 20th, I will be sworn in and commissioned as a first lieutenant and the public affairs officer for the Mississippi State Guard.
Wow.
Now it's 100% volunteer, right? It's voluntary.
Oh,
it's
a
non-combat unit, and mostly come alongside organizations like FEMA when there's a hurricane or a natural disaster of some kind where people need help. Yeah, that was the story.
That's good. Oh yeah, I want to say I was proud of you 100%, and I also agree with your your support for showing the ID when you vote. I mean, I agree with that, and I don't think it's discriminatory to help have people do that. I mean, because we want to know who's legal and who's not. I mean,
yeah. All right. Well, and it's just part of who we are, to show our identity and to make sure we are who we say we are, right? It's pretty basic.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Daniel. Appreciate it. Well, let's go to Vicki in Kentucky. Vicki, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you. I wanted to say that I was thankful for Jeff Sessions and his rolling back of the Cole memo that was saying that, you know, kind of asking prosecutors to step back from prosecuting marijuana cases. You know, I'm a firm believer that the Constitution says the Controlled Substance Act says that it's illegal. It's illegal everywhere. It's a controlled one substance, and I'm excited that the Justice Department is going to go back to doing their job. I'm a former DEA employee, and I think it's important that people get the truth and that we obey our laws.
Yeah, that news is just breaking. I see that coming across the wires here just a little while ago, and appreciate you sharing that. So what was your experience like in the DEA?
Well, it was a fantastic job, but I'll tell you, the political climate does affect how people on the front lines are able to do their job. Mm. And so I had to leave the DEA to take care of family business, but I can tell you I still have friends, and we're excited that maybe the climate will change where we can go back to doing our important job of making our community safe and helping our kids grow up to be good and functioning adults.
Vicki, hang on just a second. I want to put out the phone number again, 866-372-7234. You're listening to Washington Watch. Give us a call, 866-372-7234. So you're saying you experienced firsthand the experience of political leadership in a government job like that?
Yes, I have. And so I started back in 2006 under the Bush administration, and then I worked most of my time during Obama. And I can tell you, as a federal employee, it was not the same job as when I first started. We weren't taken care of as employees like we were originally.
Hmm. That's very interesting.
I was there when the shutdown, and I was a central employee, so I was forced to work when we didn't know if we'd get paid or not. But other people, like congressmen, they weren't forced to work and do their job.
Very insightful. Vicki, thank you so much. We appreciate you, and thanks for sharing those thoughts. Thanks for listening to Washington Watch. Give us a call, 866-372-7234. Thankful Thursday. What are you thankful for? What are you doing to serve in your community to make things different? As I shared, one of the ways I'm doing, I'm suiting up. I just got my camouflage uniform, completely voluntary, as I shared, Mississippi State Guard. We're going to meet for trainings one Saturday a month, and then a yearly training down at Camp Shelby for a week. And really excited to serve in that way. It's touching a place in me that hasn't been touched before. It's this patriotic place. And can I tell you something really cool? When you hear hoorah from General Jerry Boykin, because of that. That was pretty cool. Boy, that gave me goosebumps. Let's go to Ed in Alabama. Ed, welcome to Washington Watch. Hi, Ed.
Hello.
Hi, Ed. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm calling from Alabama, and I was just tuning in after leaving work, and there were people from around the country making comments on voter ID, and I just wanted everybody to hear and understand Alabama has one of the most strict voter ID laws there is. Mm-hmm. In addition to driver's license, you can get a state ID to vote. It's very strict. That's why our Secretary of State gave 100% assurance there is no voter fraud widespread here. The gentleman who fanciful thinks that there was 200,000 missing votes, that's just on his own mind. It's not the case. And in fact, the controversy here in Alabama was the fact that in the Democratic counties, they made it very difficult to get alternative IDs, and that had to be corrected. So I just wanted to let the country know they can have firm assurance on the outcome of the recent election.
I appreciate you calling with those thoughts, Ed in Alabama. Let's go to Lynn in Texas. Lynn, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes, sir. I'm a Christian, sober, 18 years, thanks to an inpatient drug treatment program where I came back to the Lord. And so God is really what delivered me. But being inpatient in a treatment center, whereas 10 years earlier, the first time I was busted for drugs, they put me in jail, which actually made me what you'd call a super criminal, in that I learned how I connected with a lot more other criminals and became better at what I did. And I also witnessed a guy that was a pot smoker hook up with a bank robber and become best friends. And watching the attitude, seeing how jail actually creates criminals, it does not rehabilitate. So what I want to, as a person that smoked pot for 20 years, what I recommend, but also seeing the runaway opiate epidemic, and if politicians are serious about curbing a drug epidemic, then rather than jail, then they're going to create mandatory inpatient treatment as opposed to jail. That it's just, you're just pouring gas on a fire, putting people with a drug problem in with murderers and bank robbers and thieves.
All right.
So, and I'm going to qualify something too. The opiate epidemic here again. If doctors are going to prescribe opiates, where actually, as much as I'm against it, marijuana, it's like I tell people, better to shoot yourself in the head with a 22. I'm not advocating pot, but medical uses. You can't deny the fact a friend of mine knocked out.
All right, Lynn, thank you so much for calling in Texas. We appreciate you sharing your thoughts. Sounds like you have a lot to be thankful for. Vera in Oklahoma, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, Vera.
Hi.
What's on your mind today?
Well, I wanted to kill two birds with one stone. I wanted to say that I need a raise on my pension since AT&T is so generous with their present employees that they might be generous with their retirees. But also, I think that Heather Wilson ought to be the one kicked out instead of the man that's about to be Major General.
Well, thanks for sharing those shots, those thoughts, Vera. Appreciate it. Yeah, we all could use a little more. I know it must be tough for folks on limited income, and just lift our thoughts to the Lord and ask for his provision. And from Psalm 98:1, sing to the Lord a new song, for he has done marvelous things. His right hand and his holy arm have worked salvation for him. You've been listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins. May you have a blessed day.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.